Hey, folks, this is the last podcast before the election, so before we get started, I have to tell you to vote. I have to beg you to vote, because if there's even a tiny little infinitesimally small chance in the back of your brain thinking, maybe I won't, maybe I don't need to, maybe I'm tired of this election, maybe I don't have to do this, you have to. We're counting on you. We need you. We need you to vote. I need you to vote. Jacob needs you to vote. Everybody needs you to vote. So please vote. November 8th, vote. Go to vote.org, find your polling place, head out the house for a few minutes, cast your ballot. Vote, please. It's coming up. November 8th, Tuesday. Vote. Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show! Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. We're joined once again by official discotheque representative. He pours his heart and soul into these releases. It's his friend of the show, Brady Hartle. Brady, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. It's always a good time. So, a lot of announcements out of discotheque lately, like a ton of them.
A lot of stuff has been in the works for a while. There's so many that, like, there's a lot that I'm not even working on.
Yeah.
Just a lot. Yeah. It's keeping me busy. Definitely.
Yeah. So you ran the discotheque panel at Otakon this year, right?
Well, I mean, with Mike, Mike Toole, he sort of, kept the reins going, and he and I did it, and along with, Jose, who helps us with production on certain things, Jose Argumedo,
mm-hmm.
He helps us with production, and we had a blast doing that.
Right. That's really cool. But you announced a bunch of stuff there, and then you've sort of announced some stuff recently. Can you run some of that stuff down? It's pretty a lot of it's pretty exciting.
Wow. Okay. So that is a huge list. The first thing we announced was Captain Harlock, Arcadia of My Youth, which I actually just finished proofing the Blu-ray for that. We announced Yurusei Yatsura 2, Beautiful Dreamer. Which I'm working on currently. We announced Fatal Fury, the motion picture on Blu-ray. That was previously DVD. So that's coming out. We announced, which Lupin did we announce? It was Operation Return the Treasure we announced.
Uh-huh.
We announced Lupin the Third, Island of Assassins, or P-38 or 39, I can't remember what it's actually called in Japanese. That's actually one of people's favorite specials. We announced that we're almost completed Kyosou Giga, which is actually one of my favorite shows that I've worked on recently.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool sakuga show.
Yeah, I'm excited to finally see that.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun, and I spent so much time working on the subtitles for that, because it's a little more nuanced than what the initial translation was. And so it was like a lot of work put into getting the dialogue for that almost as perfect and accurate as I possibly could.
Hmm.
Hopefully it's at least 98% there with all the work we put into it. Kyosou Giga. What else was announced there? Charge-Man Ken for streaming, which people are excited about. I know Mike's really excited about Charge-Man Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Lupin Series 2, which we had announced before, but we dated it, and that's actually just went off to be pressed, the first 40 episodes of Lupin Series 2. And obviously we're doing all four sets of that for all 155 episodes, I think. It's something like that. It's a lot of episodes for that show. It's four sets, like 40 episodes a set, something like that. So maybe it's 140-something, I don't know. A lot of episodes, more than 100. Man, I'm trying to think of all the things. I wish I would have known. I would have written a list of these. I'm doing these off the top of my head.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's good enough. It's good enough. I'm not making big demands here.
I guess finally we announced Lupin Series 4, Lupin the Third Series 4.
Yeah.
The Italian adventure, which is super cool.
Yeah, that show is awesome, and I'm super excited that you guys are putting that out.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to working on it. That show is like I love the style of it, the animation of it, that's sort of a little more connected than the other Lupins. I'm really looking forward to working on it. I've only just started scratching the surface. I got to do that little teaser we put out, and everybody seems super excited, so I'm happy.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I feel like that is the ideal Lupin show. So if that, if that goes on Toonami and, like, no one cares at all,
mm-hmm.
It manages to, lose ratings or whatever, you know when something's underperforming on Toonami, you can tell.
Yeah.
Then that's it. Like, Lupin's not going to work in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
This is the best chance. Like, if this doesn't work, then forget it. There's no version of it that's going to work. Like, that's right. The best one. That's the ideal version.
Yeah, I mean, because it's got really good animation. It's got...
really good writing.
Everything. It's current.
Yeah.
It's only 26 episodes, so it's not like you're investing.
Yeah, it's not 78 episodes. It doesn't look like it's from 1973 or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, which that stuff is good, but you know, the idea, I feel like Lupin fans are constantly like, well, you just give it a chance. Like, it's never had a chance at being successful here. Like, it's never had a shot at being a big deal. And it's like, this is the biggest deal it could ever be is moderately popular on Adult Swim, and this show is the only chance it has at that.
Yeah, I mean, because I think you couldn't really put the Fujiko series on TV because it's just it would be too edited, I think. So this has got sort of the perfect balance of what you could also get away with on TV as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I agree. So it's cool. I'm super glad you guys got that show.
Man, hard to keep it under your hat for so long, I gotta say. I was super excited.
Sitting on that one for a long time.
Oh, quite a while. We knew a while back, and I can't tell anybody, but it's streaming, but I can't say anything. Oh, I got all these materials. I can't say anything. Oh, finally, we can say something.
So I have purchased some of your recent releases. Most notably, Street Fighter II, the animated movie, which you dumped, according to you, a tremendous amount of time and blood, sweat, and tears into.
Yeah, that is completely accurate, I would say.
Maybe it's an understatement.
I mean, we got that license 2 years ago, maybe more. And we had the materials for a lot of it for that long. And then it took, DiscoDex is not my main job. So mm-hmm. I have a 40-hour a week day job that I work. And, you know, there's other projects I was working on too, but pretty constantly for those 2 years, I was working on Street Fighter II, the animated movie, getting all of the things together for it. And it was it's like one of the most complicated jigsaw puzzles that I've ever had to put together.
Right.
I would have to say.
And so to that end, there's a special feature on this thing where Mike Toole just kind of explains what the process was. I watched that video before we taped today. It's really great. It's really well put together. It explains it really briefly. It gets through it really briefly. It makes it very easy to understand. It made me wish that every anime movie that's been hacked up into a million pieces over the years had something like that to just break it down for me. Because oftentimes even the Wikipedia article is not as straightforward as that video was. That was just extremely straightforward. I feel like I have a total understanding of that now, and there's nothing else to know about it. And, that's great. I wish every movie had that. I wish, every chopped-up video had that. Every chopped-up anime movie had that. I want a video like that on Akira that's that straightforward. That's, that, you know, here's what's missing. All that stuff. That's super interesting.
Cool. I have to say, I wrote that with Reed Nelson, and Mike was really gracious doing the voiceover for us for it, mm-hmm. and he put in some input too. And Jose, who I mentioned before, edited that together. And
yeah, he did.
Yeah,
a great
it came
job.
Out.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really, really nice work. All of you guys did a really good job on that. It's great.
That was actually Justin suggested we do something like that. Justin Savakis, who everybody should know, he suggested we do something like that, and that's sort of what came out. I'm super glad you think it's straightforward, because I was worried it was too much information.
No, it's very easy to understand, I thought. But the movie itself, which, you know, looks great for that movie. It looks, you know, it's a nice transfer.
Nice and grainy, and I don't know. I like that transfer.
It looks great. It looks really good. I have not seen this movie since, like, 1994, and I'm pretty sure the version I saw was the edited VHS, the one that was in Blockbuster that was rated PG-13.
PG-13, yeah. Which is the most edited version of that movie.
And I think the one that was most commonly available for a long time.
I think so, yeah. I mean, they did both, but yeah, I think that one might have been the one that they also aired on HBO, maybe, too.
Yes, it was. And yeah, totally. And I think so. Also, like, stop me if I'm wrong. Like, so this movie, which upon revisiting it is an animated canon film, like, that's what it is. It is like top to bottom a canon films, like, late 80s action movie, like paranormal action movie. 100%.
Oh yeah. Oh, you mean like canon, like the production,
like the label Canon Films. Yes.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, like, I think that of the movies of the ilk, like Fatal Fury or Toshinden or whatever was coming out at the time, it's got like way higher production values than any of those.
It does, but at the same time,
it's very much like a schlocky martial arts movie, definitely.
Yeah, and it saves money in the exact same ways as those martial arts movies, which is like incredibly long, lingering shots of nothing. Like that scene, I started laughing out loud at that opening scene where they're showing Ryu standing up on top of his mystical rock, and the mystical music is playing, and they pan across him. It's like the beauty shots at the beginning of the Enterprise at the beginning of Star Trek: The Motion Picture. You know, where it goes on for like 15 minutes where they're just shooting this model. That's the beginning of Street Fighter 2. Like, I was laughing out loud as they keep panning across him. Then he does, like, one thing, and then they cut back and pan again. And I, oh, man. And there's, like, a lot of shots like that. Like, there's a lot of, like, really slow pans across something multiple times.
And yeah, there's a reason why I feel like when they made the PG-13 version or they made the unrated version, that they cut a lot of that out.
Yeah,
like there's that whole scene where Bison is dressing down Sagat. I don't know why I want to say Sagat, like Bob Sagat.
Because Bob Sagat, because back in grade school or I guess it would have been middle school, that is how you said his name, because no one knew, and it was Ryu back then.
Ryu.
You know, we didn't. Anyway,
I remember as a kid, like, how do you say this?
Yeah,
Ryu. Oh, yeah. I guess it's Ryu. Oh yeah, my brother had this thing where those were like, oh, that's not his name. Those are his initials, and his first name is Robert. Like all those.
His first name is Robert.
Yeah, of course, my brother's first name is also Robert. So, like, he had a little bit of.
Oh, I see his game. Yeah. He's like, that's me. It's based on me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds like something some, like, little full of shit middle school kid would say, would have said in, like, 1990. Yeah, Ryu's based on me. It's based on my life.
Based on my life as a third grader.
Done in sixth grade. I got up to some shit. Anyway,
there's a scene where Bison is dressing down Sagat, and then Balrog sort of looks at him, and then like sort of like has this little scamper off, and then it like pans on Sagat, and he looks sad, and I call it the sad Sagat shot.
Yeah,
and that's like one of the things they cut out, but it's like one of the funniest like shots in that movie.
He's like,
oh.
There's a lot of really funny stuff. So I took your advice. You told me to watch it with the unrated UK dub, which is from the 90s, and it is hilarious. Like, top to bottom, it makes that movie so much funnier. And you guys took all this effort to sync it up with the remastered footage, so it's not like other Blu-rays like this where you have to watch shitty video quality if you want to watch whatever the old cut is.
Yeah, exactly.
You can actually watch it. The other movie I can think of where they did this was Legend. Ridley Scott's Legend, where there's a Tangerine Dream score, and then there's a James Horner, or is it James Horner, or is it the other guy. God damn it, I can't remember his name. Anyway, the other guy.
the most famous other guy.
He made a he made an orchestral score to it that was like, most people would say it's more appropriate, but some of us prefer the Tangerine Dream version. Anyway, that Blu-ray has the new footage with both tracks. But usually they would just put the here's a VHS master we have of this old cut. Here it is as an SD extra that we crammed onto the back of this disc. But you actually took the time to sit there and remake all that stuff.
Oh, to fill all the gaps.
Yeah. It was crazy.
I mean, we're really lucky because the mix files for that obviously don't exist anymore.
Right.
So we were kind of lucky that we had the music and effects track isolated and that all the stuff that was missing wasn't dialogue related. It was just like we were talking about, a lot of panning scenes, Ryu sitting in the bazaar staring at that child for way too long, like lots of things like that. So we were able to actually sit down and fill the gaps pretty much with all the same material, and it didn't it wasn't as noticeable. It was seamless. So we went ahead and did that. I mean, we're super lucky that we were able to do that. We also put the PG-13 cut on there as well. We just recut that in HD because it's such a different cut from the other ones.
Right.
So we redid that in HD and we redid all the titling and everything for that. So it's actually true HD. So it's not I know it. The PG-13 cut came out on a Street Fighter anniversary set, and it was just a encode of the analog tape master of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we went through and remade that as well as just an extra. I know some people asked why we didn't completely remake the unrated versions, and it's sort of it's not that different.
There's no point in just having this one's got the boobs and this one has the butt. I want the, come on.
I want the butt. I don't want butt and boobs, man.
But that's always the question that the internet is going to ask. In any situation like that, it will be towards whatever ludicrous golden ideal of completion that they're chasing. They always, it seems like Blu-ray people on the internet always want the perfect disc, and you can't ever truly reach it. You can't really ever get
it. It would have to be two discs or three discs or something in this case. I mean, if you look at this,
then you couldn't justify the cost of doing that, and it wouldn't be worth it.
Oh, yeah. No, of course not. I mean, this release, the disc is packed full. To fit the movie, we fit the movie on there twice. In HD for the PG-13 cut and the main cut. And there is no more room on this disc, and there's no the cost effective wise there would be no way to do it. And like I said, there's the credits are what run really long on that movie, and so it's a minute and 30 seconds or something, or maybe 2 minutes that is missing from the uncut the uncut versus the unrated. It's not worth it. Why not just have it all in one video track where you can switch between what version you want, and then it's just much easier and nicer that way. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. No, I that makes sense to me. But going back to the movie itself, it's a lot slower than I remember it being, and the animation isn't as good as I remember it being, but it's a really solid late 80s action movie. If that's the kind of thing you're into, it demands to be watched with beef jerky and some Pabst
and some Slim Jims
and some of your rowdiest friends. This is the kind of movie that would be you have a VHS that's SLP. And then the first thing on the tape is WrestleMania. And then after that is this. And then after that is
episodes of Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, something you taped off Saturday morning. Or conversely, an R-rated movie that your mom does not know is also on the tape and isn't on the label.
The secret art. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and it's like Under Siege or something like that. that's a movie. It's like a Steven Seagal. Or,
something with Steven Seagal, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, something with Steven Seagal that has one shot of boobs in it.
I'm the cook. Or
it's that kind of movie.
Hulk Hogan movie I'm trying to think of. Starship Troopers.
Yes. Yeah, if you were young enough at the time, then it would have been Starship Troopers. Or, something else. Something like that. But it's that kind of movie. It played on cable heavily. It belongs next to your Schlock, your Rotor, your Exterminators, or Eliminators, I think. You know, Arena.
One of those is more important than the other. Eliminators versus Exterminators.
Well, I can't remember. Which one is the one with Mandroid? That's Exterminators, right?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Eliminators? You know the one I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. We've watched so many bad movies.
Yeah, well, that's the cyborg half-man, half-tank tread guy. Anyway, moving on. That movie is schlocky as hell. Like, I just can't believe like what a perfect Canon Films thing
like,
it is.
Sort of like homage to Canon Films at the very time
almost.
They existed.
Yeah, almost. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I like it as a movie. I think that like definitely the pacing of it is bogged down sort of towards the middle of it. But I still think that like a lot of the action stuff for an animated movie of like its budget and time like holds up like way more than like Fatal Fury or any of the other fighting game based anime. Like I would say that like a lot of those are so just like cheesy or like whereas this like I like that this actually takes the route of like not trying to make it a tournament. And it's something different from being a tournament than, all these guys get together and they're fighting in some tournament and you have the American guy and the Japanese guy and the, you know, the sumo wrestler. And this is sort of like, it's an evil plot, which is, it's still like a threadbare plot, but at least it's not like, here, we're fighting in a tournament. Let's go. Mortal Kombat. All right.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's definitely not like Mortal Kombat. Although I would kill to see a Mortal Kombat movie in this style. Like that would be even crazier. Like if you really went for it, I feel like you could make like a period Mortal Kombat film that was like a Canon Films thing. Anyway, I'm rambling. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's not like a tournament structure type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a little better than like a lot of the of the fighting game based anime at the time. It's definitely probably at the top of there. Of which ones are actually worth revisiting. Because, like, I don't know if I could rewatch Tekken or Ballerina Toshinden. Like, those weren't even very good at the time, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, they definitely... Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't think it's a controversial thing to say that Ballerina Toshinden is not very good. I think that's an opinion. That's not a particularly hot take.
No. But, yeah, I think that it sort of it stands up a bit better. And I don't know. I think, like... even though they have like the sort of like the fan service scene of Chun-Li with the breasts, which is what everybody asked me first thing every time anybody asked me about Street Fighter II, the animated movie, is like, hey, are Chun-Li's tits going to be in there? Like every time. I mean, imagine like every third tweet about the movie was that. Even though we had went ahead and said and put out the trailer, which showed like, yes, it's in there. It's uncut. Don't worry. But even though it has that scene, like that scene itself is like so different from any other like that was sort of the thing for those movies. Like Fatal Fury has it where, the cool hot girl has a topless scene like that. There's a shower scene with Mai in the Fatal Fury movie. It's in all those. And I think here, like even here, like with that scene in this movie, it's like. It's presented like it's so creepy. Like she's like in a vulnerable place. It's like he's gonna attack her, and it's sort of like psycho-ish in a way.
Yeah,
like Hitchcockian.
It's super dumb and gross.
Yeah,
but you know what? So is the sexual violence scene in any Canon Films production.
I'm not saying
that to like hand wave it, but yeah. You kind of like anytime there's a female character who's presented like revealingly and it's an R-rated movie and it's from like 1989 and it's kind of schlocky, something uncomfortable is probably going to happen. Like,
yeah,
it's unfortunate, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I feel like the scene at least gets away with it because, in the end, like in most of these movies, like she would just get like the crap beat out of her. Then like some guy would come and save her. And like, at least in this one, like she defeats him, probably kills him, and saves herself. Like that's sort of where like I'm like, okay, I can sort of go with this, because like if it was just the stereotype of he just like completely decimates her, she doesn't even get to fight back. like, and then Guile comes in and saves her. Like, that's like, really, like, that's pretty much what happens in the Fatal Fury movie with Mai. Like, Andy has to come in and save Mai in a very similar situation later on in that movie. And it's sort of like, really, that's how you're going to write it. And also they like, they always do that thing where it's like, oh, well, the girl fighters always have to fight the girl fighters. And here,
yeah,
she, like,
that's a really old, dumb guy.
Yeah. Like, I like in this movie that Chun-Li really, like, they don't have her fight. The obvious thing would be like, oh, have Chun-Li fight Cammy. But like in this one, like, she makes fun of Guile, who completely gets decimated. He lands like no hits in this entire movie. Guile.
Yeah.
Like Bison, like, thinks he's so pathetic, like, he lets him live at the end.
Right.
Like, which I think is really funny when he comes in. He's like, well, I defeated Bison. He's like, we did it. Like, you didn't do shit. You, like, got your ass beat by everybody.
Yeah.
You let Ryu and Ken do it for you. It's really, it's like really funny that he comes in at the end. He's like, yeah, we defeated Bison. We did it.
Man, that just reminds me that at the beginning of that movie, that UK dub, Bison says, or Balrog, or is it Vega?
You can differentiate it by dictator, Spaniard, boxer.
Okay, in the Japanese version, Bison is Balrog, right?
So M. Bison in America is Vega in Japan.
Vega, right. God, I always forget this.
Yes, it's...
And then,
it's,
who's Balrog?
Balrog is the boxer, who is
the boxer
in Japan.
Who is M. Bison. Oh, okay, that's what I'm getting mixed up. Anyway, God, anyway. At the beginning of that movie, Vega says, I'm interested in anyone who can beat the crap out of Sagan.
Yeah.
which is hilarious and speaks to the rest of that dub, because it seems like it was dubbed by a 13-year-old. Like, that's what it feels like. It's so funny.
I love his line where he's like, hello, Captain. Are you still planning to give me that heart transplant you mentioned?
Yeah.
There's so much cheesy, funny stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of great one-liners in there, and it's all delivered in that really authentic early 90s English dub cadence. It's great stuff. Anyway. We should get to these Twitter questions, man. We got plenty of them.
Oh, do we have a lot?
Yeah, well, we got a few. Let's get to these. Evan Jones asks, it's a niche market, but has Discotech considered releasing vinyl soundtracks at all?
No. Like, those are... there are a lot of companies that do those. Like, I recently pre-ordered that really awesome Street Fighter II vinyl set.
Yeah.
From like, the art alone, because it looks really cool.
Mm.
But there are a lot of niche companies that do that already, and I feel like... personally, like, we would kind of be wasting our time to getting into that kind of market.
It's pretty small.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's no real plans for that, unfortunately. Like, the weirdest idea we ever floated, and it's like one of the weird, like, almost impossible, would be to like reprint old NES games. I think like that was like the closest to that we ever thought about, and I think it would be sort of impossible from like a licensing point of view. But, like, wouldn't it be cool if you could buy, like, a new reprinted copy of Mega Man 2 or, like, you know, DuckTales or something like that for NES? Like, it would be really fun collectible, and people would buy it. But I think from, like, a licensing standpoint, it would be really hard, especially for those, like, cool, like, Disney platformers or the ones that were licensed.
Yeah, if you put out an LP of the DuckTales, goddamn, such a man-child. I'm such a mark. I would totally buy that. If it had a gatefold, and the gatefold was glossy, and it was the full, like, Nintendo Power style maps of, yeah, man, I would buy that. God damn.
I would just love to buy
No one
it.
Make that. Don't make that. Anyway, Kaylin Evergreen wants to know if there's any news on the Legend of the Galactic Heroes license, but that's Sentai Filmworks, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. I believe. Go talk to them.
All right. Final Fury K asks, any chance of picking up some classic sports shows? Also, thank you for licensing Lupin Part 4. That'll be on Blu-ray, right?
So Lupin Part 4 is both DVD and Blu-ray, yes.
Cool.
It will be both.
All right.
Classic sports shows, I mean...
Are you going to license Aim for the Top?
You're not talking about a Gunbuster, are you?
No. What's the thing I'm thinking of? Ace Wonori, right? That's the volleyball show.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought Aim for the Top. I'm thinking, like...
You're thinking of the Gunbuster, like, slogan.
Is it the slogan? I thought like it, that the title for Gunbuster was Aim for the Top.
Ace Wonerai, Aim for the Ace. Aim for the Top. Yeah. Aim for the Ace. That's what I'm getting wrong.
Aim for the Ace
from 1979.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really depends, like, if he finds one that's cheap enough, maybe. Like, that. It's one of those things where you look at the show and you say, okay, well, how much will it cost me to produce the subtitles and time the subtitles and proof that and do the menus and packaging for this and then press however many of these? Will I make my investment back? From this? And unfortunately, for a lot of the sports shows, it's not worth it. I mean, there's always some. I guess Princess Nine sells enough that it keeps getting relicensed. A lot of them are a hard sell. I mean, as much as I would love to see Akagi or something like that, I would love to see that come out officially. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that's technically sports. I mean, it's a game, Mahjong, but it's still the same thing where it's a hard sell because it's very like, here's Mahjong, here are all the rules of the Mahjong, here's why this Mahjong game's amazing if you don't know how to play Mahjong.
Yeah.
Right. And I love that show, but it's not for everyone and it's a hard sell. And it's all in the feasibility of the license, and if it's a million episodes, that sort of goes against it as well, you know.
Yeah. Yep. All right. George J. Horvath wants to know, with Funimation trying to promote Ninja Slayer, the animation is so bad it's good. Will Discotech do the same with Charge Man Ken?
I mean, the thing is right now Charge Man Ken is just a streaming show, so there's not. I mean, other than Twitter or that kind of thing, there's not going to be a lot of, it's not like we're buying magazine ads or something like that.
Oh, no, I expect you guys to buy skins on ENN. You better pony up for...
some Charge Man Ken where we could just, put some, blown up screenshots.
It's a two-week ad campaign that covers the entire site.
For
Charge Man Ken, yeah.
Yeah, that would be... Yeah, but there's not since it's streaming only, I'm sort of doubting there's going to be tons of marketing other than us tweeting about it. And from what I recall, it's if it does well on streaming, then we're going to think about doing DVDs for it. There's not going to be a huge Charge Man Ken marketing campaign. However, when we do packaging and everything, we try to at least poke a little fun at some of this stuff. If you've read the captions on the Street Fighter animated cartoon or the Mega Man DVD set, we tried to kind of little poke fun at what we're working on, you know, because you can't just sort of blind face work on these things. So I'm sure that if we do an actual physical release for Charge Man Ken, we'll at least poke fun at it a little bit on the box.
All right, then. Trick the TM asks, beautiful dreamer, in Arcadia of my youth, did you get the cropped widescreen masters of the 4:3 theatrical ratio?
Okay, so I'm pretty sure he has this wrong in that it was in theaters in 16:9, and when they were released on home video, then they became 4:3. That I'm pretty sure on that.
I'm fairly certain that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I have a couple different answers, and I know people aren't going to be – nobody's going to be 100% happy. But for Arcadia of My Youth, the Blu-ray is the 16:9 HD version that came out in Japan a few years ago. That master looks beautiful. It's really nice. It's probably the best that movie's ever looked, especially if you had the old DVD release, which is based off of a Laserdisc master or something like that. As for Beautiful Dreamer – as far as I understand, the 16:9 version is the version that the director prefers over the 4:3. And so that is the one that we are allowed to include. We really couldn't do much about that, unfortunately. But the 16:9 version looks really great anyway. And it's such a jump up from the old DVD that hopefully, even though it's 16:9, people will enjoy it.
Vinny Av AGC asks, was Discotech involved in the production of the Lupin 3 Part 4 dub?
I think we put some money into it. But like, I don't know if we like I definitely know that we weren't like in control of it or anything. That was all TMS. Like I said, I think we put some money into it. I'm not sure 100%, but, that initiative was, mostly TMS. They made all the hard choices on that. We didn't have a lot of say, even though it sort of turned out the way we would want it in anyway with the original cast and everything.
Jose, you were talking about him earlier, asks, what do you think the biggest misconception about the work we do at Discotech is, or about Discotech itself?
That we have a ton of money, and that like we have unlimited budgets for extras and like, I guess further, like the amount of time it takes to do these things. To just figure out, like, you're telling me how, there's that 10-minute video and that explains everything. To figure that out, that took me like a month to figure all that out.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, I'm sitting there, I'm buying VHS tapes. I'm capturing them, comparing them. I'm buying like as many versions of this movie as I can find to figure out like what do I need to ask the licensor for? What do I need to try to find? And then like I'll give you a big example. So one of the big features on this on Street Fighter II animated movie is that we included the sort of the I don't know what to say, the thing that people have asked for most for this movie, other than seeing Chun-Li naked, is the English version over the Japanese score for this movie. Now, with everything with that movie, it's all rumors, and there are places that reported like, hey, oh, that version exists somewhere and it streams somewhere. Well, after delving through, like asking the prior licensor Stars, who was manga and everything, and going through all that, we couldn't find that anywhere. Like, just that didn't exist anywhere. So to do that, we had to actually like track down the original like dialogue tapes, not the master tapes, but the dialogue tapes, and then have those tracked to the movie all over again from scratch, and then find the stems for the music and the effects, and then pay somebody to take those and retrack them. And it's not as simple as, oh, I can take the voices from the old track and put them over the original music, because like the voices by themselves don't exist anymore. So having do all that work, get that done, and then have it all remixed and then proof all that, is months and months of work. And like to pay a person to do that is a lot of money. In this instance, I was so adamant and wanted that myself on the disc that I ended up paying for the production of that, like about half of the cost of mixing it and doing all that. Like, I didn't get paid any of the legwork of finding all the materials for that. And like, I paid out of my own pocket to get it mixed and have it mixed right. We paid Les Claypool, who this dub was an old Kevin Seymour dub. He did that. You know, he did Castle Cagliostro and Macross Plus and all those cool 90s dubs. This was originally mixed in New York, and sort of it was like the one unfinished project that Les Claypool didn't get to do with Kevin Seymour, and he got to finish it. And I really wanted to see that happen. And the reality is there's not thousands of dollars to do that all the time. And so if we donate our time or money or whatever we can to try and make things like that happen, it's really a fan driven sort of love for the product more than the love of the profit, at least on, my end. And a lot of all the people I've worked with, like Jose or Mike or Reed or whoever's worked with us on these projects, Daryl Surratt and, all those people, they love the product more than making a buck, honestly. And I think that's sort of the biggest takeaway is when we work on these things, we usually really love them.
Yeah. I would point out there's nothing wrong with also making money doing that.
Oh, no. Like, if I couldn't at least make some money on this, I couldn't keep doing it. Like, I couldn't spend my time on it, because, I need to be able to live. But, like, it's a lot of times people think that when you can't do everything that a fan might want you to do, that it's, you know, money motivated or whatever. And that's not really the case, I think. I don't know. Hopefully that answers Jose's question. It's a little rambly.
All right. Jesse Bretriz asks, any real chance of Discotech making Criterion-style sub-licensing agreements with major studios for Satoshi Kon films, like through Sony?
Anything's possible, honestly. I don't know. I mean, like, there are certain films like Castle of Cagliostro and what have you that we try to treat like that anyway. Like, working on those discs or Street Fighter, we definitely try to treat them like they're Criterion, like, to certain releases. But, like, I have no idea. Like, I'm not the licensing guy. I'm not the money guy, so I'm not sure.
All right, Megazone 23 Part 2 asks, a sentient Laserdisc asks, which color Jacket Lupin is your favorite?
Oh, man. So I don't like specific colors of Lupin. My favorite stuff is, like, I like Castle of Cagliostro, where he's Green Jacket, but I also really love Mystery of Mamo, which is he's Red Jacket, and that's way more Monkey Punch-like, that version of Lupin. Like, I would say, like, the most underappreciated Lupin thing is probably Green versus Red, which has both color jackets in it. So I'm not really a jacket purist. I'm more of, like, I like certain stories because, like, those characters can kind of be thrown into, like, any situation. And there are certainly better specials than others. And I think it's pretty jacket agnostic. So if I were you, I'd check out Green versus Red Green versus Red or maybe some of, like, the later specials, like Island of Assassins or stuff like that. Like, less jacket, more just what the situation is. And obviously, Lupin the Third Part 4 whenever it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray.
All right. Suji Benson asks, Sonic fan here, definitely going to pick up Sonic X on DVD, even though I prefer subbed. Would you consider licensing the old OVAs as well?
I'd love to. I don't think it's available right now. I think it's not up for grabs. Like, I've pushed for that one personally, and it's just not happened yet. So I don't know. I really don't understand. Like, I don't know what's with that license right now, if it's either not available or if somebody still has it or what. But, like, I'd love to work personally. I'd love to work on it, but what get licensed is ultimately not up to me.
All right. Okay. Jeffrey asks, The Lost Canvas reportedly did poorly, but if you consider another Saint Seiya, would you consider another Saint Seiya license if Anime Midstream's BTX DVDs do well? Woo, that's a stretch.
Well, I have to say that, like, the chances of that are probably very low, because that Saint Seiya that he licensed was, like, one of the more recent ones and has good animation, and, like, I just think that, like, I guess just the market's not there for it. I just think the chances are really low. Unless there's some way to make it profitable, it's not worth putting the money into that where there are, other things that we could license and, do better with the same amount of license fees.
All right. Saint Seiya sold poorly, huh?
Yeah, I think he was pretty much asked point blank about that at a convention, and he was like that it didn't sell very well. And I mean, that's unfortunate because, I mean, it's a neat show and it has its fans. But, like, I just think that the market for it is it's like Lupin has more fans, and it's still sort of hard to push Lupin, you know, like not push it, but like make the ends meet on those, you know, because like it's they're sub only. There are a lot of it's old stuff. And I think that Lupin is way more known than Saint Seiya, and even then, it's a challenge to make them work.
Right. Jeff Burns asks, any plans for more SD Blu-ray releases like Samurai Pizza Cats? How well did that experiment sell?
So, okay, yes, there are at least, I believe, two different SDBDs in the pipeline. However, I can't say what they are yet, but okay. Yeah, there's two more that are in production right now, and Pizza Cats did well, so yeah, we're doing more.
Steve Brandon asks, any chance of a Kimigari Orange Road TV OVA or movie license rescue? Is it a pipe dream at this point?
I'm not sure that's even, like, on, like, any of, like, the production staff's radar. Like, I'm not sure there's anybody on staff at Discotech who's a huge Orange Road fan.
Yeah, well.
I don't know. I have no idea. Personally, for me, it's not, like, one that I've pushed for. I guess I'll let them know the interest is there, maybe. I don't know.
All right. Speaking of, is the interest there? King of Anime wants to know if you're thinking about picking up more Detective Conan aside from Lupin crossovers.
I have no idea. I'm pretty sure those did pretty well, though, so it's something to look at.
Get some case closed going.
Hey, I put a lot of case closed jokes on the back of the packaging for that.
When truth prevails.
That's on the packaging. So is, case, is the case closed or is it another cliffhanger?
Yeah, there you go. I liked your little thing on the back of Street Fighter that says bonus features, you can't give it up.
Oh, go for broke?
Go for broke, yeah.
Yeah, go for broke. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's great. It's really good. You can't give it up would have been even better.
Give it up.
That should have been on the cover.
Can't give it up. I mean, I tried to put as many quotes as there on the back of that. Trying for die.
It's good. Yeah, it's really good.
I couldn't justify millionaire fighting.
Right. Oh yeah. No, that's hard. Engaging in some millionaire fighting.
Yeah, millionaire fighting.
Speedwagon asks if there's a chance of a discotheque or a discotheque-like company taking the initiative to license old or classic manga.
Well, aren't there like...
There are a few companies that do that.
Like the Tezuka guys do that all the time. Like yeah. I feel like that's sort of handled. And I also think that like a lot of those older releases are probably better fit for digital, personally, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure.
So I recently picked up that Emeraldus card cover, and that's really cool.
It's great. Big on Anime asks if you thought about licensing Slayers, movies, or the OVAs.
Have we thought about it?
Slayers great.
Slayers Return. I love Slayers the Motion Picture. I love all that stuff. I'm a big fan
of
that.
You love Slayers the Motion Picture.
I love Slayers. It's so bad.
Everybody. I mean, look, everyone has fond memories of Slayers, but to say that you love the first movie, like the first movie's barely entertaining. Like Slayers Return and Slayers Greater at least have some funny jokes in them. The first one is boring.
I like the first movie. I have sort of fond memories of it. I mean, I would say like the
Well, I'm not here to invalidate that. I'm just
great. I'm trying to remember whatever the one where they build the gigantic Lena Golem and fight the robot, like the sort of like steampunk robot Naga, like that OAV series, and it's sort of connected. Like I really like that series. Like that's either great or excellent. I can't remember which one.
Hmm.
Yeah, like those specials, I'd love to. But like again, it's what's available. You know, who's bidding on it? Because like right now, there's a huge bidding war between all these different companies, and like. You have Hulu and Amazon getting into it, and they have, you know, deep pockets. So who knows who's getting what nowadays, you know?
Hmm. Right.
Well, I'd love to do Slayers, but again, that's if we were able to get it.
Well, I didn't mean to impugn your love of Slayers, the motion picture. Oh. I feel like that would be the one I'm least excited to revisit.
You don't love Joy Rock or Rowdy Gabriev?
Jeez. Joy Rock.
So that is his name. That was his name in the dub, anyway.
I think so. Yeah.
He was like he went by Michigan J. Joyrock in the ADV dub of that, which is like just so weird. There's so much weird stuff in those dubs.
It sure is. have you looked into licensing the original Birdie the Mighty OVA, or are there problems with that?
I have no clue. Right. No idea.
What are some of your biggest successes outside of Lupin?
Biggest successes outside of Lupin, Castle of Cagliostro, definitely.
Outside of Lupin.
Outside of Lupin. God, what? My brain just went.
Definitely Castle of Cagliostro. That's number one on the outside of Lupin list.
Outside of Lupin. It's treated like
it's not Lupin.
yeah, that's true. That's so true. That's so true. Yeah. God, what? Even though we went out of our way to make sure the Lupin logo was on it this time, versus every other release.
Yeah.
Outside of Lupin, like I think that like Street Fighter is already doing well. Stuff like you know the older fan favorite stuff. Like I think Darkstalkers is doing well. Iria did surprisingly like well, even though it's like a reprint. I think people wanted the remastered video on that. Mm. I'm trying to think of more. Like I work on so much Lupin that like outside of Lupin, it gets a little blurry for me.
Well, okay. He also this same person also asked, have you tried to get the second Cardcaptor movie from Kodansha? I mean, a few people asked about that.
Oh, the Cardcaptors. Okay, so yeah, the Cardcaptors movie did pretty well. Again, I don't know like what the situation is on the second movie. I do know though it's a different licensor than the first movie, so it's, you know, again, it's up in the air. I don't know. I don't even know if we've bid on it or what. So who knows?
Zero Flame 16 wants to know if we'll ever see the Ronin Warriors dub get released, or if sales not justified it.
Okay, so well, the thing is if we released the dub of that, it would sell probably way better than Samurai Troopers did, because the thing is the reality is the English dub, either the English dub that people remember from a million years ago, or something with an English dub and not subtitle only sells better than something that's subtitle only, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in the case of Ronin Warriors, there's like there's problems tracking down the rights to who owns the rights to that dub. So that's why. Otherwise, trust me, it would have been put out along with the original Samurai Troopers OAV. So it's a rights issue thing. That just it's not that there's rights issues. It's just nobody's sure who owns what about it.
All right. Super Deformed asks, how did Orgus perform, and are there plans to put Orgus 2 on Blu-ray?
I don't think we have the license to Orgus 2. I think that's, you know, currently unlicensed. Though the first set of Orgus did pretty well. Surprised me, but it's a neat show. So, yeah.
Last question from Cute Eye and Derek Wilson. Not sure how to send questions for Ancast, so here's one. Is there any info on Magic Knight Ray Earth yet? Any info on that?
Here's a question. Here's an answer that I can give you. I mean, people will be happy. So the discs are finalized. The packaging is complete and approved. And we are just waiting to find a slot open to set a date for it. So it's all done. It's all approved. It just needs to find a date, and then it's going out, and then it's done, and people will be happy.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I know. I'm super glad that that's almost done.
Yeah, you've been working on that for a long time.
That was a lot. Well, I've been working on it a long time, but like the discs have technically been done for a long the discs have technically been done for like 4 or 5 months or something like that. So since April, so it's just been waiting for approvals, especially on packaging and stuff. And I mean, since it's a clamp show, you know, they keep it like take an extra eye on all that stuff. So I can understand why it took so long, but it's exciting that it is coming out finally. And I'm really looking forward to having that on my shelf and not have people ask me about it all the time.
Yeah, finally. All right. Okay, man, that wraps this up. Once again, it's a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, of course, anytime, man. I always have fun, and I'm glad you let me come on here and sort of, like, you know, promote my stuff a little bit. But Street Fighter was sort of a little special case for me, and I was really sort of invested in that one.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I know it meant a lot to you, and I really enjoyed taking a look at it. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Brady for stopping by. The theme song is Vote. It's by the band Vote. You can check them out at Vote on November 8th. Don't forget to vote. Vote on November 8th. Get out of your house. Go vote. I need you to vote.